Welcome to Golf and the Good Life, your guide to golf travel across the pond. I'm DJ Jones, he's Connor Evers, and today we've got a pretty fun episode lined up, visiting a few of our favorite par threes across Scotland. But before we get there, Connor, the golf travel season, it's like it's gone from 0 to 60 in a snap. What is the good word up at H&B HQ?
Cheers, DJ, and thanks for the intro. That is correct. We're already mid-May and the season is off and running. Weather's been pretty good, actually, overseas. Some of the pictures and field reports have already come back and groups are enjoying themselves overseas, but all is good here at HQ. But shout out to a few of my groups that have recently come back from overseas. Groups from Philadelphia Cricket Club, Del Paso Country Club, Tijuana Country Club, and as well as Desert Mountain Club, had some great experiences across the pond. And I also wanted to give a shout out to my good friend Larkin Gross, PGA professional. He made it to the PGA Championship at Valhalla. Also made it in 2022 at Kiowa, but very excited for him. And I'll be driving the short two-hour drive down to Louisville, Kentucky. We'll be down there supporting him, but just had to do a shout out to him. Had an eagle on the last hole to just slightly get in, which is great.
Yeah, really cool to see. And for the first time in a long time, gives me a reason to watch the PGA Championship, which is not something I say all that often, but really cool to see. If you've been listening to the podcast and you've ever heard Connor mention my buddy Larkin on, you know, one of his past trips, this is the same guy. So he's got some Lynx golf experience to boot. But, you know, back to what we were saying earlier about, you know, the season just kind of going at full tilt already. You know, here we are. It's mid-May. And today alone, we have members playing Adair Manor, County Sligo, Crail, Prestwick, Muirfield, Port Marnock, and the Jubilee Course. All today. A random Thursday in mid-May, we're 2 months away from the peak of the travel season. So it's kind of crazy to think about what it's going to look like at that point, but really love seeing all the field reports that have been coming in. If you are traveling with us this year, send them our way, golf@haversham.com. We love seeing those photos and videos and whatever you might capture along the way. But shifting back to today's episode, we are going to cover our favorite par threes in Scotland. And we just thought this would be just kind of a light, fun episode to do, you know, a little break from the here's all the advice that you need for XYZ destination. But I'm going to really stress that these are our favorite par threes. This is a completely subjective business, not unlike all the top 100 lists and so forth that are out there. So I fully expect to hear from some of you, some of the good lifers out there that, hey, you missed this one or you missed that one. And that's really what makes this fun. So I'm looking forward to covering some of these holes and reliving some memories from them as well. But Connor, why don't you kick us off with not necessarily your favorite par three, but just the first one that's on your list.
Yeah, absolutely. If you listen back to the legendary Lynx episode on Prestwick, I did mention a lot of information on hole number 5, Himalayas at Prestwick, and here we are. So my favorite one, I would say, overseas, just an absolute fantastic par 3. I can also see, again, as DJ pointed out and mentioned, it's a very subjective list. So I can also see why someone would completely disagree with me on this based on the hole. But again, Himalayas lives up to the name. You tee off, it is a completely blind tee shot. Depending on the tees and the wind and all those different factors, I mean, it can play, you know, 160-ish yards. And if you're playing all the way back and got a lot of wind, I mean, you could be hitting a metal into the green. And when I say into the green, it's, you're kind of essentially hitting into the abyss. And when I go back to the wooden planks, there are some painted lines on the planks comparatively to where you are teeing off. So, you know, kind of the direction of where the hole is and you hit it and it's essentially blind. You don't know where it's at and you kind of make your journey and walk up to the top of the planks and you can kind of see the green and hopefully your ball is there on the green waiting for you. But last time I played it, hit a 5-iron like 180, 190 yards or so into the wind and was on there 10 feet short, made the putt. So another reason why it's also one of my favorites there. But that is my favorite, I would say, in Scotland, DJ. Any info on that one?
Oh, I love it. I mean, it would never be built today. And if it was, the architect would probably never be working again. But a great pick for your first one. My first one, and it's not necessarily my favorite in all of Scotland, but it's my first one on the list, is the fourth hole at Cruden Bay. This is about as stern of a par three as you'll find in Scotland. It plays close to 200 yards. The green is sort of elevated up on a little shelf. It's not super uphill, but it's, you know, you have to play kind of across a dip, and then the green is up some. But it's a really picturesque hole because there's a little thin ribbon of water that separates the hole from the little town of Port Errol. And there's a footbridge that goes across it. And it's just it's a postcard town. Like if you were to send a wish you were here picture, like this would be it from Cruden Bay. And from the, if you get a little higher than say the tee box, I don't think you can quite see it from the tee, but you can pick up the spires of Slane's Castle out kind of over the town. Again, I had my drone and I didn't have to get it very high in the air in order to see the castle. But, you know, I've played this hole a few times. The last couple of times I was playing with my buddy Rue McDonald from Scottish Golf Podcast and Dunes Cruden Bay. And I've hit three wood both times and not reached the green. So, you know, if you get any kind of wind coming in, it's quite a hole. And, you know, it's really neat as well. The body of water there, there's all kinds of old World War II fortifications that they had put in place to, you know, to hopefully, you know, prevent a possible invasion or what have you. So if there's any hole in my book that captures the essence of Cruden Bay, it's the fourth hole, and that's why it makes my list. But Connor, what would be the next one on yours? I don't think we're traveling very far, actually, as I'm looking at this list.
We're only a few holes past yours, but mine is actually still at Cruden Bay, and it's the 15th hole. I would say the reason why it's my favorite also is I went out and played Cruden Bay by myself. It was quick round out by myself. It was awesome. I had like the morning to myself. There's only a few members out and a couple of visitors and just whipped around. It was great. Played like 2.5 hours. So I've watched the Noah Lang Up videos. I've seen the stuff. I've seen how the back nine, 13, 14, especially 14 is with kind of the bathtub green, if you will. And I'm in the fairway on 14. Again, it's a par four and it's kind of a bathtub green, and there's a hole, if you will, in the middle of the, well, I thought it was the green. I thought it was the flag stick from the distance. It was kind of a foggy, misty morning, so I couldn't really see the flag. So I lasered it and got the number, and I hit it and I see the ball bounce a couple times and, you know, walk up, and I'm literally laughing out loud to myself because I thought that was the hole. And I don't have a caddy. Goes back to the reason why you should get a caddy at all these courses across the pond. I digress. But I'm 20 yards short of the green, and I'm just like literally having the time of my life by myself. No one is out there. Now fast forward to the next hole, 15, which is the par three, and it's blind and it kind of plays over the 14th hole. I would say it's just more just the memories I had of just like having such a great time playing golf by myself and being out there and just enjoying it. I would say that's probably why the 15th also just has just a favorite memory. Again, these holes are all subjective. I mean, the 15th is not, you know, one of the best par threes all in Scotland, I would say, but it's just my personal favorite just because of that memory of itself. But a little blind, and again, you kind of actually hit over the 14th, which is great. The ending at Cruden Bay is fantastic. The whole course is great, and gotta have that on your list if you're going to Aberdeen. So
I've often heard of the 15th to be called a dogleg par three, and yeah. You know, and it's because you're right, the dune that's kind of, I guess it would be sort of behind and maybe to the left of the 14th yeah. green, it sticks out into, you know, essentially the playing corridor for the 15th. So you are very much just hitting it, you know, and hoping. I have a picture that I took last time of the little marker on the tee box where they stick the tee that gives you the pin position for that day. So it's either front, middle, back, and then left, right, center. And then in the distance is the castle. So it's a cool spot, but I'm shocked you only had 20 yards in after lasering the guidepost on 14, because that green is like 80 yards deep or something wild. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not that it's not 80 yards, but it's a long way. You really got to look at those tee marker things, before starting those holes, out there at Cruden Bay, but that's a great pick. My next one, we're going to go much further north, up to Brora. And, you know, Brora, obviously, you know, you mentioned no laying up and so forth. And this is a course that has just climbed the ladder in terms of the notoriety with the traveling golfer and so forth. And rightfully so, and really glad to see it. And but the par threes at Brora are awesome, you know, and there's a couple in particular, you know, there's one on the back that's like, it's like, I think it's the 13th. It's only like 125 yards. But it's the typical, like, miss the green and it's a double kind of thing. There's a burn that kind of cuts in front of it. And you stand on that tee and you're like, there's no way you can hit it in this burn, and yet you can. And then the 18th is like, you're going to need to pull driver, because, I mean, it's 200 and something yards. It's uphill. There's a huge fall off in front of the green. So if you're short, like, you're coming back. And then the clubhouse is behind it. So you've got all these people watching you from the bar or whatever. But my favorite is the 9th. And I can hear, you know, some of the good lifers out there rolling their eyes, you know, to this pick, because in the comparison to the others, it's kind of a pretty basic hole. It's like 150 yards. It's just a straightaway little par three. There's like a couple, there's a bunker on each side or whatever. But the reason it's my favorite is because, you know, Brora is very much an out and back type links. The 9th is essentially as far as you get from the clubhouse. And there's just this sense of tranquility that you get at that point, and on the green in particular. You know, the whole place right up against the beach. There's usually a couple sheep roaming around. You've got the you know, the mountains that are kind of lining the A9 highway there in the distance. And then you've got the A9 going by. So, you know, there's camper vans and so forth running. But when I think of Brora, I think of this sense of solitude and this feeling of, hey, I have definitely come off the well-worn path. But when you're out at the 9th, that's to me where that feeling is at its peak. And so that's why it's my favorite. It's kind of one of these places that if I'm sure there's a bench, you would just want to sit on that bench and just kind of sit for a minute and before you carry on. But Connor, that's my take from Brora, not to get all deep and philosophical, but what's next on your list?
No, I love it. I mean, like you said with Brora and a little bit with me and Cruden Bay, it's not so much the hole, it's just being there and the views and what it makes you feel and all that stuff. So I love it. I love it. That's great. My next up is the 6th at Royal Dornick. And I think Dornick, I mean, the par threes are amazing, all of them at Dornick. And I just wanted at least one on the list. Just a really solid par three. And as you kind of mentioned with Brora there, Deech, I mean, you have got to hit the green or else you're looking at bogey at best on hole 6. And like I said, the yardages, we can throw the yardages out there and what club you may hit, but every day is completely different. So, but, you know, a nice little cut, I would say, from a right-handed player is what's preferred on the hole. But you don't want to overdo it because essentially death is down to your right, kind of to the right of the green, and you're pitching uphill, and it's just a challenging hole. If you go out at Dornick and you hit all of the par threes, the green in regulation, you are golfing your ball, and you're hitting your irons quite well. So like I said, it was very challenging to pick one at Dornick, but I just had to pull at least one of them on there because I think the sets of par threes at Dornick are, I mean, I think they're the best par threes in all of GB and I, to be completely candid. But yeah, hole number 6 is my next one, Deej.
Well, it's a great pick, and I think you made the right pick, not only because of the hole. I mean, you're right. I mean, gosh, right there. You want to just kind of sit somewhere in the distance and watch golfers and see like how they play it from the right side. But, you know, because I mean, that drop off is steep to say the least. But for me, you know, it's the climb to the seventh tee after that is, you know, again, kind of one of those quintessential moments. And, you know, you finish the sixth, you climb up this mountain, if you will, and you know something special is coming. And sure enough, you get to the top and it's and the whole thing stretches out behind you and really, really great spot. My next one, I'm going to get even further off the well-worn path than I was at Brora. We're going to head over to Shishkin, which if you're not familiar, Shishkin is a 12-hole course over on the Isle of Arran, which is on the kind of off the west coast. If you have ever been or seen photos from, say, Prestwick and Royal Troon and Turnberry and so forth, Arran is just off there in the distance. And you can catch a ferry. So if you happen to be playing the west coast and you want to work something in that's a really unique situation, catch the ferry over to Arran, and you can usually get one in the evening back. But like I said, 12 holes, and it plays in the shadow of this giant stone monolith. I don't even know how else to describe it. I mean, it reminds me sort of like a craggy stone mountain in Atlanta, if you've ever been there. But that's not a fair description, because this thing is up against the ocean and it's way more jagged and so forth than Stone Mountain is, but that's my comparison. And the third hole, it's only like 125 yards, but it plays straight up to a shelf that is up against this stone mountain, if you will. You can't see anything of the green. There is one of those posts, so don't be like Connor and shoot it with your laser. Like you're definitely going about 5 or 10 yards beyond that. But there's nothing to guide the way other than just there's a green up there somewhere. And again, it's straight uphill. So if you catch it thin, good luck to you. You know, you've really got to hit a good shot to get it up on top. You know, it's only 100 and some odd yards. So you're hitting probably a wedge or a 9-iron or something. Just like what we were just talking about with the payoff on the seventh tee at Dornoch, the payoff at the top here at Shishkin is fantastic. And then it's followed by a drop shot par three with the green pressed up against the ocean and so forth. And so it's just two like bang, bang holes. Like I could have really flipped a coin on which one, but the shot straight up the hill is one that you do it one time, you'll never forget it, but you also will want to do it again, like immediately. It's worth the trip over to Arran by itself. But Connor, line us up your next one there.
Yeah, so next one is the 14th hole at Crail. And when I was putting this list together, I kept going it back and forth between the 13th and the 14th at Crail. Both are excellent, but I think it just leaks over to the 14th for mine. It's also a kind of shorter drop shot par three. And the hole before it is a uphill long par three. And my friend Larkin, I was mentioning, we played it, and I honestly think I hit 3 wood and he hit 5 wood, and we were both short, and it's straight uphill. So you walk up to the top, and essentially that's what gets you to the 14th tee box, which then again, drop shot goes down. And there's the old boathouse that's essentially kind of their staple throughout the course, and it's beyond the green. So you have that from the look up from the top. And I think we both hit like pitching wedges or something. It's like 140 yards or so, but fun little hole. And you got the rest of the holes kind of out in the vista from there, and obviously the ocean. And then once you're done, you kind of walk down to the green of the 14th, and holes 1 through 14 of the goal on the Bolcombe links, that's kind of in one area. And then 15 through 18 kind of play behind it. And there's a walk from the 14th green to the 15th tee box in the back. And this is where you can actually walk by. It's Constantine's Cave. And according to local tradition, and there's kind of some information people don't really know, but King Constantine I was killed in a cave. Again, it's literally walking right by 14 going to 15. And it was in the year 874. But there's also some kind of local knowledge. People really don't know if that's the exact area, but there is some information on that too. That's just obviously adds to the factor of the coolness of the hole. So yeah, 14 is a really cool hole, really pretty. And again, got good vistas of the course. And then the ocean right behind, right in front of you too, which is great.
Yeah, it's an awesome vista from that tee box. And I hit a wipey 7-iron the last time I played. It didn't even come close to finding the green. But what's also neat about it is if you've ever read the book, or if you don't have it on your list, put it on your list, the book Golf in the Kingdom by Michael Murphy. And in the book, it's a fictional book, but the course that they play in the book, or that's kind of the centerpiece of it, is sort of modeled after Crail. And there's a couple holes in particular that sound just like the 13th and the 14th. But if I recall correctly, Michael Murphy claims that it wasn't Crail. Like, he hadn't actually visited Crail before when he wrote it, but they both sound remarkably similar, and including the cave. There's a guy in the book named Seamus McDuff, I think is his name. And he like lives in the cave. So it's a fun little connection to that book. And if you haven't read it, pick it up, and it's worth a read there. But my next one, we're not going far. We're going down the street. I'm getting back in the mainstream here, and we're doing the 11th at the Old Course at St. Andrews. And, you know, this is an iconic par three. This is a hole that, you know, if there was one that had to kind of define Scottish par threes, it's often this one. And it's because, you know, number one, it's the Old Course. Number two is the history that has, you know, that's taken place there. Bobby Jones famously found the hill bunker over on the left side, took several to get out, tore up his scorecard, and walked off the course in his first Open. And things got better for him from there, but it's kind of a notorious hole. And it's in this part of the course that's, you know, called the Loop. And, you know, if you haven't played the Old Course, it's a unique, wild, you know, part of the course where two holes more or less crisscross. Well, they don't more or less, they do crisscross. And, you know, it's just a fun setting, but the green is basically as close to the water that you get. The estuary is just behind it. And, you know, same thing. It's like 175, 180 yards, but if the wind's coming in, it could take everything in your bag. And the green slopes pretty steeply from back to front. And I'm actually kind of surprised that I put this on my list, because candidly, I very much dislike this hole, despite it being one of my favorites, because I think it was my second time playing the Old Course. I hit some kind of wipey shot short of the green. It didn't have a chance. I'm 3 under par on this hole, which, if you know my golf game, you know is wildly uncharacteristic. And the green, it drops off like sheer straight off the back. If you go long on 11, just like the 6th at Dornick, you're dead. Well, I go to putt to the pin that's in the back of the green, and I blasted it right off the back edge down the gully. My caddy was like, "Oh no." Like, it's the minute it left the face. That's exactly what he said. And then I proceeded to leave it short coming up the hill, and then I blasted it by down the hill back over the green. I made a 7, so I started the hole 3 under. I walked off 1 over, and I think I shot 76 or 77. But anyway, you know, just a fabulous hole. But it's the typical thing. Just, you need to hit the shot, but if you don't, you know, there's all kinds of trouble there waiting for you. But how did you fare on the 11th when you played it last, Connor?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. I know what I did. I hit it just short of the bunker and made bogey.
Sure, fair.
Just short of the bunker. Yeah, I like hit it.
Four
hit
is a pitch. Fine score there. Take a 4 all day long.
Yeah, I hit it okay. The wind got it. The wind started right after we got off 11 and then moved to 12, and it was just into the face. You know how the prevailing wind comes in. So the last, you know, stretch in the back nine going on the old, it's, if the prevailing wind's in your face, it's into you from literally essentially 12 all the way in. So
yeah,
then it got really challenging. But yeah, I agree. That was gonna be, I was thinking of that one too. Eden hole. I mean, it's cool and it's replicated in so many other courses as a, you know, template hole. But all right. My last one is hole number 7 at Western Gales. I think Western Gales is one of the most underrated golf courses in all of Scotland, in my opinion. I thoroughly enjoyed my round there. But again, Larkin, my friend, again, he was over for a while with me on this trip that we played a bunch of golf, and we're on the 7th. And I mean, Western Gales is great. I think it's 4 or 5. I think that's when it starts, the holes. They're literally like, the holes are right next to, essentially, I mean, right by the beach. They're kind of the property line of the course to the beach, if you will. And I think it's 4 or 5 when it starts. And these holes are, I mean, they go pretty much essentially straight. And there's really not much change, but the ocean is directly to your right. And hole 7 is, I hate signature hole, but they kind of say it's that. I mean, it's a really, really pretty par 3, kind of meanders left to right, if you will. So my natural shot is just a little baby cut, and so it favorites it very well. And I hit this thing, I smoked a 6-iron, and Larkin and I were looking at this, I'm like, dude, this looks really good. And it landed, saw it bounced, and we didn't see it go again. We're like, oh my gosh, like I just got a hole in one. So, and it's not like I'm thinking it and he's like secretly going along with it to make me feel better and not knowing it. Like, we are like fairly convinced it is in the bottom of the cup. And I'm like, I think he took a video of me. I'm going up there, I'm like, dude, this is in. And it was not, but it was like 10 feet short or so, and made a par. But other than that, the hole is really pretty. It's a little downhill. It's not like a drop shot par 3, perhaps, but a little downhill. So you're kind of up by, you can see the ocean, and you go down. So just a really, really aesthetically pleasing golf hole. And the rest of the holes are great, but it's subjective, me, you know, so like, you know, again, it's not going to be maybe the best hole or the favorite hole, but it's just, it's ours. And a lot of times it has nothing to do with the hole or how it's set up. It's just the feelings and the experiences. Number 7 at Western Gales is my last one in my top 5.
Well, and it's a great pick. I, you know, the last time I was there, I actually was there without my clubs. I know that you're going to think that's blasphemy, but I was there with the drone, and it was, I guess it was late October, and it was freezing. I mean, it was so cold, and I could not feel my fingers like flying around with the joystick on the drone, but the sun came out beautifully and got some awesome, awesome footage of the 7th. I like literally showed up to the course and went straight to that tee box. Like that was the place I was going to get, if nothing else, while there. So awesome pick. My last one, going to go back north, and it's going to be the 4th at Castle Stewart. And again, this is a course that, well, you could easily throw in the 11th as the pick, but for me, it's the 4th, and for a couple of reasons. The first is obviously the namesake castle is there in the distance. It's framed absolutely perfectly behind the green, you know, in the distance as you're hitting the shot, and it's actually the hole's kind of taking you a little bit more inland for a stretch. But what I appreciated about it was there's an old documentary, and I hope it's still around like on YouTube or something, but it used to be on Castle Stewart's website, but I think it's on YouTube, and it's essentially called The Ethos of Castle Stewart, or Making Castle Stewart, something like that. But it's a 45-minute documentary on the building of the golf course. And I found it thoroughly fascinating. The late Mark Parsonen's walking through his, you know, his ethos and his approach to building these holes. And the 4th, what I found so unique about it was there was actually like a giant ridge that cut straight across where between the tee box and the green. And in order to make the hole and to frame it the way they did, where this castle's in the background, they literally cut a hole straight through this ridge. And when you play it, you can see it. Like, you're like, oh yeah, you can see where, you know, here's the end of the ridge and here's kind of a little bit where it picks back up. And but I just found that totally fascinating. And again, anytime you're you're playing toward an ancient castle, that's always a good thing. But that's to me the reason why it made the list, simply because, again, the same way that the fourth captures the essence of Cruden Bay, the fourth at Castle Stewart to me captures like all of the thought and the process and everything that went into building that course. But Connor, I think we had two pretty solid lists, but folks listening out there no doubt are like, oh my gosh, what about the second at Dornoch, the Redan at North Berwick, the postage stamp, the 13th at Muirfield, the 9th at Turnberry, the 9th at Gullen? Like, the list could go on holes that we left off. If you had to throw one more in that maybe lost out on the top five, what would it be?
That's a good question. I mean, there's so many, but I would probably say the 16th at Carnoustie. When Larkin and I were playing it, it was so windy. I mean, it was probably 40 mile an hour winds. And the final stretch at Carnoustie is extremely challenging. And 16, and I think it was 225, 235, something like that. I hit 6 iron because I was like, it was one of those things. It's like, all right, it's probably usually like a 4 iron, 5 iron, 6 iron. I flew 6 iron over the green, like didn't even touch the green. Like,
wow.
It was blowing so hard. And I think Larkin hit like 8 iron, like on the green. It was absolutely bananas. And so just really fun. But man, if you are, we got the lucky draw on that, but if you are playing 16 and it's into the wind, I mean, God help you, you may be hitting driver, no joke. But then 17, the following hole, for us, we hit driver 3 wood and probably like a 7 iron or 6 iron into a par 4. So like I said, final stretch at Carnoustie is really good. Really, really challenging, I should say. But yeah, 16 would be one of those, Deej.
That's a great pick. I'm going to throw one. My honorable mention has to be the 6th at Turnberry, and not because of necessarily the hole itself. I mean, the hole is fine. It's a, the par three, it's a great little par three. I think there's a big drop off the back of that one as well, if I remember correctly. But what really makes it special to me has nothing to do with the golf hole. It's the walk to the golf hole. You tap out on 5 and you've got this, this path that essentially takes you out to the beach, and then it runs up the shoreline above the beach for, I'm going to say, 200 yards, maybe, 150 yards. It feels like a long way. And of course the Elsa Craig is out there. And, if you're playing it, later in the day and the sun's kind of starting to make its way down, it's just an awesome, awesome spot. That seaside stretch at Turnberry is pretty awesome. And so for me, it's not even about the hole. It's just the walk, to the hole. But Connor, this was a lot of fun. We covered a lot of terrain in Scotland. Anything you want to throw in before we wrap this one up?
I had an absolute ball. This was fun, Deej. Funny how ours at Cruden Bay kind of lined up for course-wise. But this is great. Looking forward to the rest of our groups traveling here in the next couple of weeks, going up until June. And we plan on doing another one, but in Ireland.
Narrowing down the list in Ireland, I think, is going to be maybe even harder than it was for me in Scotland. But a lot of fun. Thanks for being with us. As always, we are going to have everything in the show notes. We'll link to some of these websites and so forth. But if you've got any questions, golf travel related or otherwise, send us a DM or email us golf@haversham.com. But otherwise, thanks as always for tuning in. We will be back again soon with another episode. But until then, we wish you plenty of golf at its finest and life at its best.